Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, we'll be having callers a little later. You can always call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please don't call before the half hour, and we may not take any calls for the first hour. Just have to see how things are going. We have with us this evening Carol Herdlicka, and Carol's husband was a pilot lost over Vietnam. How many years ago, Carol?
It will be 40 in May.
40 years ago in May, so that he was shot down in
May 18th of 1965 is when he was shot down.
All right, fine. And so now, is there any evidence, of course, that he survived the being shot down?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there was a capture picture, and he had made tape recordings. And, he was interviewed by a Russian correspondent, and the Red Cross finally got the path at Lao to admit in 1967 that he was captured alive.
Was he captured in Laos then?
Laos, mm-hmm.
And, of course, we never got any of the people home from Laos. We never tried to get any of the people home from Laos.
Right.
And this is the great tragedy, you know, that the American people have never been told the truth about the men we abandoned. And one reason, of course, is they would never get anybody to go into the military or fight when they realize it is the official policy of the upper echelon of our government, if somebody is captured by the enemy, many times to abandon them. And that happened after the First World War. It happened after the Second World War. It happened in Korea. It happened in Vietnam.
And it's happening in Iraq.
And I'm sure
it happened before then in Bosnia.
Right. And the thing is that the American people are not being told because the media is controlled. But Carol has been searching for her husband for 40 years, trying to keep this alive, and there are others. Do you have any idea how many men we really did abandon?
Yes, there was a Russian document that was turned over to our government a few years back, and there were 1,205 that the Vietnamese admitted to having in that document. And then we have a Moose document, which was an American document that stated there were about 1,300. So somewhere in that range, those men were left.
It was done intentionally. It was done. Well, I'm going to let you tell why they abandoned them, because I think the American people have been lied to. They were lied to by President Nixon. They were lied to by Henry Kissinger. They're being lied to by the controlled media today. They're being lied to by the people in the Defense Intelligence Agency.
And on and on.
Why did we abandon them?
Well, basically what had happened to Laos is the fact that they wouldn't admit to being in Laos. Kissinger never negotiated with the Laotian government to get the men out. And so the Laotian government told Kissinger that no POWs would be released through Vietnam that were in Laos. So they were just snubbed. So basically the Laotians just kept their prisoners is what happened.
Now, the 1,200 to 1,300, you're talking about people in Laos.
Were 500. There'd be more like 500 were in Laos, and the others were in Vietnam. But you see, there were many that were known in captivity in Vietnam that did not return.
Right.
But the main thing with the Laotian captives is that the United States government wouldn't deal for them.
And why did they absolutely... Well, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a few moments here with Carol Herdlicka, whose husband was lost, fighting for his country 40 years ago and abandoned by the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carol, certainly we were talking about why this whole thing happened. Why wouldn't Kissinger ever negotiate with the Laotians to try to get our men back?
Well, that I can't answer. I really don't know why he didn't negotiate for them. But you see, you'd have to go back to the French war with Vietnam, and the French actually bought out their POWs over a period of years. And I mean, there's a document that was put out by Rand that shows exactly what the Vietnamese did. Our government could have negotiated over the years for these people, but they just wouldn't do it, because once the lie was put in place, once Nixon came out and told the American public there were no more POWs, that's when it started. And even though there were people inside agencies that said, well, we know there are men there, and they said, you don't understand, there are no POWs. So basically, Nixon put the policy into place, and the agencies had to follow the policy.
And if you want to keep your job in government, you keep shut,
yes,
you keep your mouth shut, you never tell the truth, you lie whatever you're told to,
mm-hmm,
and then you retire with a nice pension and good medical benefits.
And you are never held accountable for any wrongdoing that you do when you're an agency employee. As I saw during the Senate Select Committee, Senator Robert Smith tried to bring several people up on perjury charges after the Senate Select Committee, and I sat right there and watched government witnesses lie to the senators.
And, of course, Bob Smith was in a minority. Bob Smith was an honest man. I have met Bob Smith several times, and in fact, I supported fully his candidacy. I think he would have made a wonderful presidential candidate, but he was betrayed by the people he trusts, and that ended his presidential bid. I think he was feared because, of course, he would have been the one man who really might have been able to get something accomplished.
Yeah, he was really mad one day when one of the government witnesses had actually turned photographs over and then had them printed so that when the Vietnamese people came in to testify, they were made out to be liars, because if they said the staircase was on the left-hand side, well, now it's on the right-hand side. And Senator Smith was really mad when he found that out. But that's just a part of it. I mean, it is such a monumental thing now, because once the lie was put in place, then there was no way that they could save face. And in 1981, the Vietnamese actually offered 57 POWs to the United States. And the offer came from China to Canada down to the United States.
Hold that thought right there for just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Carol Herdlicka. We're talking about the men who were abandoned by our government, and Richard Nixon knew that there were prisoners of war left. He just lied to the American people because Richard Nixon was a liar. I mean, I could forgive him for Watergate. In some ways, he was trying to defend the men who worked for him. But there is no excuse to abandon those men. In fact, later on, he told Captain Red McDaniels, who went to visit him after he had left the White House, well, Red, you know, I would have gone back to get them, but, you know, after Watergate came up, I couldn't do anything, and then I was out of office. But even if he was out of office, he could have told the truth. No, Richard Nixon, of course, wanted to be rehabilitated by the establishment. He was rehabilitated, but he was really a sneaky little man without any moral principles at all. And what was really so disgusting, he always used to lead the prayer breakfast there in Washington, D.C., and everybody thought he was just such a wonderful, wonderful Christian. He intentionally lied to the American people, and there are at least 1,000, probably many more, American prisoners of war. Some of them are still alive there. And then, of course, Henry Kissinger, who could never tell the truth anyway, who referred to our fighting men, and you can see the reference, I believe it is page 194 of the book of The Final Days, written by Woodward and Bernstein. He referred to our fighting men, the brave men, who went overseas to fight for America, as stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. Stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. That's Henry Kissinger, who, of course, was one of the people instrumental in getting the present president elected, the man that the present president wanted to head the 911 commission, but, of course, he turned it down because he'd have to reveal all the intricacies of his financial dealings, which, indeed, are totally corrupt. So he certainly has been honored by subsequent administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican, and yet there are people throughout the world who feel he should be tried as a war criminal. People in many other countries, in fact. But let's not get to Henry Kissinger. Let's get to the men we abandoned there. And you were saying that it was in 1981 the Vietnamese offered to send some of the men back?
Yes, I actually have the printed notes. I got them through the archives. And it shows where we were offered the 57 POWs for the $4 billion, $4.5 billion that Nixon had promised the Vietnamese.
Well, why don't you go into the background of that? Because most people don't understand that Nixon had actually sent a letter to the Vietnamese,
yeah,
promising to give them war reparations to help them rebuild
channeled.
Vietnam after the terrible destruction of that country, and that was the written agreement, and they were going to give our prisoners back when they got the money. And they couldn't tell the American people that.
No, that was under the table type of a deal. And then when the POWs came back and Congress saw how they had been treated, then they just cut everything off. And I truly believe had Watergate not happened and had he been able to pay them, we probably would have gotten more men out, because that's the way the Vietnamese did business. They basically sold back the POWs, and you could check that out through the RAND Corporation and the study they did on how they returned the French POWs, and that's what they did. They just piecemealed them back.
And, of course, the French paid ransoms for
them. Exactly. And our country won't.
At least they cared about their fighting men. The French cared about their fighting men. The Americans don't. And the fact that most Americans say, well, I would be willing to do whatever we could. The trouble is the media has lied to the people,
correct,
and the people who hear the message really don't want to believe it.
Nope, because then they would have to do something, and that's the reason nobody wants to hear it, because then they would actually have to do something. And the thing is that the POW community has tried to stop this from happening to anybody else, and it goes on today. And the thing is, you ask yourself, do you want your grandchildren to be in a situation like this? If you don't, then it's time to step up to the plate and start doing something. And making these senators, when they send people off in harm's way, you make them make sure these people are rescued. And we all understand, you know, people are going to be killed. But when there are captives, they need to be returned home.
Well, we abandoned them in the First World War. We abandoned them in the Second World War. And, of course, we abandoned them in Korea and in Vietnam. And there was a wonderful report that came out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We have copies of that report here at Radio Liberty. Totally suppressed by the controlled media. The last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth. It's called the Helms Committee Report. And if you're interested in it, why, of course, it's available. You can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, the men who worked for the Senator Helms, they were all fired for daring to put out the report and tell the truth. The last thing that they want is for the American people to tell the to learn the truth. Jim Lucerne, who was chief of staff for Senator Helms, had been chief of staff for 20 years or more, was fired because they put out a report that told the truth, and a few Americans at least got copies of that report. I'd say there's probably not one in 1,000 Americans who's ever heard of the Helms Committee report.
No, but that was a big thing in the early 90s. And his whole staff got fired, is the way I understood it, and they put somebody in there to take that office over and shut that down when that came out.
That was Senator Helms, of course, who had up to that point had been such a champion of the men we left behind. But somebody put pressure on him. They had something on him, or perhaps he had a different allegiance.
Yep.
And, of course...
Well, Washington has a way of controlling people. I've seen it in action. And when they don't want you putting stuff out, they just shut it down.
Well, I saw the most amazing video last night. In fact, we're going to be carrying it. It's put out by Bill Dumas. Have you seen that?
Yes.
What did you think of it?
I thought he did an outstanding job.
And this is the story of Bill Dumas's uncle, who was abandoned in Korea. And they even apparently brought him down all the way down to the place where they're going to exchange troops. And then they took them back and of course, denied he was ever...
It
was our government that denied it. The Koreans didn't deny it. They knew that they had him. It was our government that was determined not to let the American people know the truth about these men. Who they've never tried to repatriate.
It's just like during the Senate Select Committee hearings, you had two, three former Secretaries of Defense sit right there and admit to the Senate, or to the hearings, that we had abandoned men over there. And you would have thought right then there would have been a big outcry for us to go get those men.
But, of course, the media blacked out so many of the important things, as they always do. Somebody working within the upper echelons of the major newspapers simply deletes these stories because the last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth. Otherwise, they wouldn't want to send their sons and daughters off to be cannon fodder or slaves for the rest of their life in a foreign nation.
Now, we expected that to be a big headline, and it didn't even make it to the paper.
And I remember it was James Schlesinger, former Secretary of Defense, who admitted that, that we had left men behind. And who else? Well, there were others, a couple of other people that, who knew all about it and were willing to tell the truth. And then there were others who got up, and they simply lied.
Well, the people inside the DIA were the ones that really lied about the live sightings and everything. They had thousands of live sighting reports. And the way they stopped the live sighting reports is they've moved to Stony Beach out of Thailand, so now people can't walk in off the street and give you live sighting reports on Americans in Southeast Asia. And that's the way they're trying to keep the information from getting out today. But there was satellite imagery. I mean, there's just been overwhelming amount of evidence of the men that were still alive there. And, of course, we don't know how many are still left, because it's like anything. People are going to die. But there are still people there, and we have a case that one of the researchers has a lawsuit against the CIA for documents. And finally, after it's been 8 years that has been going on, they've been stalling, but they finally admitted that they know of at least one live POW. So if the CIA admits to that, you know there's a lot more.
Well, what's ever happened to the case? Is it ever
going
to get into court?
It's going forward, and they have tried to get out of it, but the judge has finally ruled in our favor, and they're going to have to give up some documents. And that's where all of the evidence, especially on my husband's case, is in the CIA, because they ran the war in Laos. And so all the information, plus the fact they're still there today.
And, of course, what people don't understand is the CIA really ran the Vietnam War. You didn't realize that. Just as they're running the war in Iraq, you hear about Abu Ghraib and all of the contract personnel who were telling the enlisted men to torture the people. Have you heard about any of the contract men who were giving the orders over there in Abu Ghraib prison being brought up on trial? Who are they? Why, the covert CIA operatives. There's a whole separate military structure over there within the CIA that you're never even hearing about. It's operating in Afghanistan. It's operating in Iraq. It operated independent of any rules of warfare in Vietnam and in Laos. And
the fact it's covert.
Right. Well, it's called covert, but you'd think that somebody would tell the American people. Well, a few people have tried. There have been books written on Operation Phoenix. There's some material up on the Internet about that. That was a CIA operation. It was a CIA operation where they simply murdered Vietnamese who were accused. They weren't necessarily guilty of anything, but they were accused of not liking the Americans. So they simply tortured them and killed them. There were 20, 40,000. I don't know how many there were. We've heard various figures from various people, but there were an awful lot of people, and they've totally concealed the existence of this. And this is the dark side of our government, and I really believe that the CIA is really probably primarily responsible, working behind the scenes, trying to conceal the truth about the men we abandoned over in Vietnam and in Korea. And, of course, in the Second World War, even though they weren't organized till after the Second World War, why the OSS was part and parcel of the same organization. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here with Carol Herdlich, and if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is a tragic story, and, of course, we will be carrying this video. It's called Missing, Presumed Dead, The Search for America's POWs. And it's really a gripping, infuriating story. Very well done. But remember, next time it could be your son or grandson. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Carol Herdlichen, and we're talking about the men who we left behind. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've learned about your husband?
Well, of course, they immediately tried to kill him off, even though he was well documented in captivity. And over the years, I've, you know, fought every agency in the government over this, and they kept telling me that, well, we believe the possibility that he died. And I said, okay. I said, show me the evidence. Well, I said, well, we really don't have any evidence. And at one point, they said he died in 66, and I came on some documents from the CIA that stated that in 67 he had a meeting with the Prince of Laos. So that put him alive again in 67. Then they said, well, they thought he died in 68. Well, then I took a trip to Russia, and there was a Russian correspondent that had interviewed David several times in captivity. And so I went to Russia to meet with his wife because he had died. And she gave me a document that showed my husband was alive in 69. And so that was past the date that the government, U.S. government had said he died. And then in 1990, I got documents that showed he was alive in 1990. And it was being held by a General Chang. And it said, suspected of holding D. Herdlicka and friends. And so the more I get into it and more I start doing the investigation, I realize that all these years I thought the United States government was trying to find my husband, was actually doing an investigation. And I found out, no, they weren't doing an investigation. They weren't doing anything. They were trying to declare him dead. And so every time I would find a document that shows he's alive, then they have to regroup and figure another way around it.
Well, it would appear to me that basically that, you know, everything is being done to cover up the truth about what's really going on there. Now, I've heard that the Vietnamese have repeatedly said that they would negotiate for the release of our prisoners. They told that to a Congressman Bob Dornan, that they would actually return the prisoners if we'd give them money. And, of course, by the 1990s, when they were desperate for trade and recognition, they probably would have given them back for nothing. But the impression I get is that we really don't want them back.
Exactly. That's exactly it. They've offered to send POWs back. In fact, I have a document that shows that the Laotians have offered. But our government does not want them, because then that's going to open the big bucket of worms. And how are they going to explain that here are all these men over there that are alive, and they never did anything to try to get them out? So they're not going to bring this to the American public. And that's why it's so difficult to get anybody out from over there, because there was, during the Dornan hearings, I saw a document where there was actually one of the POWs had actually gotten a letter through a Lao officials to the Americans, and he was asking to be brought back. This is 95, and he said, I'm married, I have a Lao wife and family, but I want to come home. Well, guess what? They didn't bring him home. And then, of course, what happens is all the witnesses to these things quit talking for some reason.
Well, you know, of course, brought out very, very clearly on this video that Bill Dumas has put out about his uncle that, you know, people get threatened. And
yes.
In fact, before one of the hearings, several of the witnesses died mysteriously. Two of them had heart attacks immediately before they were to testify. Now, you can imagine one person having a heart attack, but two of them just before they're to testify? Why, that's something like Sam Giancana or the Mafia, before he was to testify before the Senate. Why, of course, he was brutally murdered, but we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Carol Herdlicka, and we're talking about her husband, and of course she was able actually to get all sorts of evidence from every time why she'd get evidence that he was living, why the CIA then would say, well, yes, he was living then, but he subsequently died, and the last time that you could prove he was alive was, what was it, 1990?
1990.
And of course the government has done everything they could to cover up the truth. And as we were just saying, we have this wonderful video, and we're going to be offering it. It's put out by Bill Dumas, and if you want to get it, it actually is narrated by all people by Ed Asner. So Ed Asner certainly did a great job of narrating this video. But basically, the point that they were telling was that there was going to be a hearing, and there were some of the veterans who were coming who had actually gotten out but knew about the uncle that was a POW. And just before the hearing, two of those witnesses mysteriously had heart attacks and died, so they couldn't testify. Does that sort of thing happen in America? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that happens. My friend Gary Webb, I have never met him, but I talked to him many times and interviewed him. He was on the CIA hit list, and he, we're told, had committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice. One time, the bullet deflected down, blowing off the front of his face. The second one deflected up. I wonder if anybody really believes the story. Well, the coroner did, because he said it was obviously a case of suicide. Let's go to Ron, who's calling us from Richland, Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Well, hi, Dr. Stan. I was a veteran of the Southeast Asia military war games myself, as was my brother. My brother was wounded, but luckily, providentially, we both returned safely. But with the question I wanted to ask Carol, that's your guest name?
That's yeah. Carol Kerlicka, yeah. Right.
Just how much support have you gotten from these, quote, veterans, unquote, organizations?
Well, actually, we have gotten quite a bit of support from the Vietnam vets in different areas and different groups, like the Vietnam has been real supportive of the families. And then there's, of course, some veterans groups that just deny that these men could be alive. But I understand that, because if they admit that there are men left there, then they are going to have to do something about it.
Now, is that what the American Legion...
American Legion doesn't help us at all.
Oh, well,
American Legion, VFW.
VFW is worthless, too.
How about AMVET?
No, AMVETs haven't helped
us. How about Vietnam Veterans of America?
Yeah, we've had not the Vietnam Veterans of America. We have the splinter groups, like in states, we have some veteran Vietnam vets groups, but not the VVA as such. They are more politically inclined to go along with the government.
See, like all these guys care about is sending more money to the Veterans Administration bureaucrats.
Well, I think the other thing, Ron, you have to understand that most organizations have been infiltrated and taken over from the top. And many of our Christian ministries, the same thing has happened. Many of our conservative groups, many of our anti-communist groups, some of them were actually created by the other side, you know, so that they would have a foil to and they could get people all involved fighting communism with apparatus understanding what this battle was really all about. So they have actually created organizations and then, of course, used them to neutralize the people. Or if there were organizations there, why, of course, they've infiltrated them. They've infiltrated all the militia groups and many of the racist groups and many of the white Aryan nation groups and even some of the people, you know, this one group in Oklahoma, the Elohim City. It was Christian Identity. It was on the Attorney General's list. Christian Identity was a terrorist group, said Janet Reno. And who headed it? A man named Reverend Millar. And who is Reverend Millar? Well, under oath, he admitted he was an FBI informant. So they were creating these organizations, and I think they've done it with the veterans groups, too.
Well, the thing is, we've gotten more of the grassroots veterans groups, Vietnam vets, that help us. But the VVA, the higher echelon, they're not helpful at all.
Anything else, Ron?
Well, just one thing. Preach the word in season and out of season.
I think Carol's been doing this for 40 years now.
Ma'am, keep it up. And,
I will.
Hopefully I can get off my fat wallet and start trying to get the word out and maybe take our country back.
Well, that would be nice.
God bless you, Ron.
God bless you.
Thanks very much for calling. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And then here in the Central Coast of California, it's 864-8295, or just 464-8295. If you're actually living here, people have asked me to give that prefix on it, and they're calling in from other countries, and we do get calls from really all around the world, people listening on internet or on shortwave. So here we're having a story about the men we abandoned in Vietnam. And the great tragedy is there's been such a cover-up of this, and anybody who talks about it is immediately marginalized. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly, Carol, I'm sure it must have been very, very discouraging for you to see these congressional hearings where these bureaucrats can get up and lie with impunity, and they know they're lying, and nothing is ever done to them.
Well, the way I understand it, I was told by somebody that people in these agencies basically are covered. I mean, under the national security thing of they can hide behind that at all phases, and that's basically what they do. So nobody is held accountable. Even when I caught some of these people lying to me and I sent it in to the inspector general, the only thing that ever happens is then they get retired. They're never, ever made to pay anything or lose any benefits or anything. I mean, they're just free to do whatever they want to do inside these agencies, and that's the sad part.
And that is, of course, why our founding fathers wanted to restrict the power of government, because they knew it would be used for corruption.
Well, they definitely, but the thing that bothers me the most is that the Senate is supposed to have oversight of these agencies. And even though I have taken this to my senator's office, I've pointed out misdeeds in these agencies, and nothing is ever done to these individuals. They're never reprimanded or anything.
Well, I think we have some of the finest senators and congressmen in Washington, D.C. that money could buy.
You're right.
And until the American people understand that, nothing is going to change.
Nope, it's not. And that's a sad thing to say, too. And I will say another thing about being, I spent a lot of time in Washington since 1990. I've spent a great amount of time back there. And the thing that probably bothers me the most is that the senators and the congressmen don't have time to read bills that are coming up for votes. And what they do is they rely on their staffers. And some of these staffers are like 26-year-old kids, 20-year-old kids. And they are reading these bills and telling the senators and the congressmen the way they should vote. And, you know, I didn't vote in any 20-year-old, and a lot of those kids weren't even born during the Vietnam War, so they have no interest at all in the Vietnam War. And that's the thing that bothers me the most, is the way business is done in Washington. I got a real education, and it wasn't quite like the books tell you. And that's the sad part. As we do have, our Washington has gotten off the road here somewhere, and I would just like to see it come back and be a government by the people, not a government for the people.
Well, I certainly agree with you totally, and we just need to get the message out. That's what we're doing right now. We'll be right back. Well, you must be touching a tender spot. We are just getting obscene telephone calls in response to what you're saying, because there really are people who don't want this message out. And, you know, it was really so interesting watching this video by Bill Dumas about his uncle, how often when people were trying to come forward and tell the truth, they were threatened. You know, in fact, there were instances why it was quite obvious that they were afraid for their lives to tell the truth about the men who were left behind. That was such an incredible revelation. I think that Bill Dumas did a wonderful job on this video, and we've really got to carry this and get it disseminated far and wide, because certainly a video can be a very, very powerful thing. We need to get this message out. Well, Carol, you know, of course, now, as far as the various groups of the families of the men who are abandoned, are many of these groups fairly effective? Or at least, are they? I know some of them have been very compromised and been taken over by the other side, but are some of them really, of course, adhering and really trying to get the truth out?
Well, yeah, the families are always trying to get the truth out, but the thing is, when anything good happens in the POW issue, you can't get it into the mainstream media. It either has to go on the internet or radio programs like yours, because the mainstream will not carry it. And that's like we have tried to work through the legislating end of it by getting legislation put into place. In fact, the Missing Persons Act, we worked as a community, the POW community, worked for 6 months doing telephone and faxes to get the Missing Persons Act changed. and it had not been updated since 1942. Did not have any protection for our men that were left behind or anything like that. We finally got it passed, and Senator McCain went in the middle of the night and gutted the whole thing after we had it in place, I believe, from January through August, and he gutted the whole thing, took out all we had put in there, that any of these people in these agencies that did not tell the truth and were going to be brought up on charges. Well, of course, they didn't want that in there. They didn't want anybody punished for making misstatements to the family members. Plus the fact we put protections in for anybody that was captured and anybody that was left to be brought home. Well, of course, they didn't want that. And so we found that the legislative end doesn't work either. And, I mean, we've tried about everything. I've worked on the Inspector General, and I've sent things into their offices, and the only thing, like I said, that happens there is these people are retired and with full pay. They never lose any benefits.
But, you see, that's how they buy their silence. These people, of course, many of them, of course, know what they've done is wrong, but they don't want to sacrifice their retirement. They don't want to sacrifice their health insurance. And I've had people say, on different issues, I don't want to risk my family just for this issue.
Nope, they won't. And I can understand why somebody wouldn't step forward, but I don't understand how anybody could stay in those agencies, because we have had some people that have been in those agencies for 40 years. In fact, there was one individual that was on my husband's original shoot down information, and he just retired here just lately. Well, I don't know how you can sit there and watch the information come across the desk on these men that were left in Southeast Asia. They were known to be in captivity, and the government knows they're there. I just don't know how you could do that to somebody, but they can for some reason. And just like this man that was asking to come home, he was telling them, I have a Laotian wife, I have a Laotian children, but I would like to come home. I just think that's really sad.
I'm surprised that the Laotians, probably, they must be just living there in Laos. I'm surprised that he wouldn't be able to, by one means or another, to get transportation to the United States.
Well,
it doesn't sound like he's in the captivity,
no,
is he?
Well, they're not in captivity like you and I think of captivity, but there is a form of captivity, because I have talked to Vietnamese and people that were over there, and what they do is they basically tell the POW, if you leave this, say, village, and if you try to contact anybody, we'll kill the whole village. And that's the way they keep them captive. They don't keep them captive by locking them up. They keep them captive by knowing that they will be responsible for everybody in that village being killed if they try to contact anybody. And plus the fact, you have to realize that the CIA is still over there. And they know exactly when people are coming, and they move. This is a communistic country, and I don't know whether any of your listeners have been to one, but you don't have free run of the country.
Now, well, what is the CIA doing over there helping the communists?
Well, who knows what the CIA is doing? They're always doing something, but they're still over there, because they know exactly where you are at all times when you're traveling over there.
Well, I'm sure they know everything that we're doing here in this country as well.
Oh, yes.
I mean, we have informants. I just reading something today about this fellow who had spent 15 years, 10 or 15 years, infiltrating a conservative organization. And, of course, he's very good friends with everybody. Actually had married a woman within this organization so we could get to the top of it. Totally dedicated, and everything he did, of course, was to get information to our government. People say, well, these were bad people, and the government needed to know everything about them. And yet, of course, what about the people who just dislike what the government is doing? They're maybe very patriotic, but they're being watched as well, and this is the frightening thing. The average person has no concept how extensive our intelligence agencies are. And, of course, as in General William Odom's book, called Fixing Intelligence, and General Odom ought to know, because he had the NSA for many years. His book, published in 2003, Fixing Intelligence, he asked, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA have journalists planted in the media? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? I think we all ought to ask ourselves that question. And this was written, 2 years ago. They're collecting dossiers on everybody. Well, they're not necessarily tracking the terrorists. They're tracking people like you and like me.
Well, what happens is any of these agencies, they get out of control. They have no oversight. They have no one to have oversight over them, and they get out of control. And that's what is happening now. They're just going, it's like anything. If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And there has to be an oversight committee. But you see, there's nobody up there, like I said. The Senate is supposed to be oversight of these agencies.
And they're really not.
And they're not doing their job.
Sure.
And they can pull. The thing is, like if you will talk to a senator or anything, they'll tell you, well, we can't do anything. That's nonsense. They can do something. They can pull their funding. And that's how you stop this. You pull their funding. But they won't do it.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Carol, who's been at this for 40 years looking for her husband. Now, you know, people can go into Laos and travel around. Has anybody actually, any tourists ever run into any of the people over there?
Oh, no. See, that's what I'm telling you, is that there is no way that you can run into anybody, because, first of all, you're talking that this is a thick jungle. You're talking that there are dirt roads, you know, it might take you a day to get from the bottom to the top, and then you might not make it, because depending on the season and how much rain. And it's a dense jungle. People don't understand. You know, in these little villages, you know, they might be just a few miles apart, but that's dense jungle. I mean, it's a beautiful country. I've seen pictures, and I have several friends that go over there, but there's no way you can stumble on somebody. And that's the same way in Vietnam. I went to Vietnam, and we had I won't call him a guard, but we had somebody with us at all times. And when two of the people in our party decided to take off and go to the beach by themselves, he just about had a coronary because they were gone. And they were gone just a few minutes, and they were stopped by police. So, you know, people think you just go over there and just travel however, but that's not so. It's a communistic country.
Well, that's the most amazing thing, Carol, because, you know, today when you pick up the newspaper, we never refer to Vietnam as a communist country. It's just Vietnam. It's never communist Vietnam.
No,
it's never communist China. It's never communist North Vietnam. It's never communist Cuba. Because, of course, everybody's supposed to believe that communism is dead. After all, we defeated communism back in 1991, and we've won the Cold War, and there's no more communism in the world. And so they just sort of dropped that one word from any description of Vietnam. Now, what about Laos? Is that pretty well a communist country as well?
Well, and not only that, but Laos is very dangerous because of all of our bombs. There are people getting their arms blown off and legs blown off daily over there. Plus the fact you have the rebels, they're fighting in amongst themselves there. And I don't know whether you've read recently, but they have bombs that go off in Vientiane. There are buses that are bombed. And so, you know, there's just all kinds of factions. And each little province, you know, you have to be careful because they're all fighting amongst themselves. I mean, it's just not where you can just take off and travel. And I know there are people that do take off and go backpacking and what have you, but they better stay to the trails because, like I said, they're over there with all of the bombs and stuff that are still laying out there. And in fact, I had talked to a guy, 92, that was over there picking or was doing the demolition for the Halliburton Oil Company, and he was going along with his Laotian guard or guide or whatever you want to call him, and they came up over this bridge, and there was a little Laotian settlement there, and when he happened to glance over, there was a guy that was a good head taller than all of these people. He was walking along. He had a rope around his neck and two armed guards behind him. And so he asked the driver to stop. Well, the driver wouldn't stop. Well, when he finally got the thing turned around and got back there, of course, the guy was gone. So he thought, well, I'll just turn this over to the DIA. So he called the DIA and turned the report in. And so then it went by a couple months. So he decided he'd check on it and see what had been done. Well, he found out they hadn't done anything. So I thought, well, he'd go to the CIA. So he contacted the CIA, because this guy had never been involved in the POW community at all. He was just a former Army guy that was doing the demolition for all of these bombs out there, so Halliburton could get in there without getting blown up. And then he realized that the CIA wasn't going to do anything, so he decided, well, he'd just do a little investigation on his own. So he started sitting around with the Laotians around the campfire, and he said, you never ask them about Americans, because he said, if you ask anything about Americans, they immediately shut up. And he said, as it went by, he said, one day this little Laotian guy said, well, you do know that there still are Americans over here. He said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. He said, they moved about 250 of them in 87 back into Laos. And he said they were kept in tens of 10, which means 10 at a time, different places. And he also told them that he says they move them. And so there you are. That's how they do it.
Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Fairly well, Dr.
Should you speak up a little louder, please?
Yes, fairly well, thank you. Carol mentioned Halliburton. Is Halliburton, well, before she answers that, what Halliburton is doing over there, I wanted to ask her if the name Terry Reed, who was a pilot in Vietnam, who subsequent to that was retained by the CIA, as I understand, to fly contraband, in this case apparently cocaine, out of South America into Mena, Arkansas, when President Clintonista was the governor down there.
No, no, but what does that have to do with what we're talking about, Jack?
Well, I was just wondering if Terry Reed, or Bo Bright, for that matter, who I know has gone over there looking for POWs. And I'm just wondering if any of this isn't connected with drug activity of the CIA.
Have any thoughts at all on that, Carol?
Yeah, the CIA, under Air America, did have drug connections in Laos, and that's a big thing, because that's why I think a lot of the Laotian stuff was kept quiet. But the thing is with Bo Greitz is he did go over there and he did see POWs, but when he came back, he was totally discredited. And that's what they do to you, is they discredit you.
And they almost got him killed. They actually were telling, they were monitoring him from by satellite, and then telling the communists where he was, where he and his group were, so they would be killed. This was our own Central Intelligence Agency. Anything else, Jack?
But you see, the CIA did run drugs in Laos. That's how they pay for their covert activity.
Sure, and they're running drugs out of Afghanistan today. I mean,
yep.
When the Taliban were in power, they did away with the drugs. Now that the Americans are in power, why the poppy fields are blooming, and people can't understand why we can't do anything about those poppy fields. Oh, why, my goodness, we were to destroy them. Why, how would the people make a living? Why, it would make the people mad over there. The warlords wouldn't like us. Ladies and gentlemen, the CIA is the largest drug smuggling organization in the world today. And, of course, they are an extension of the dark side of our own government. It's about time people begin to realize that. Anything else, Jack?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Carol, I wanted to ask her two questions real quick. Whether the funding of CIA activities is done through the Senate, and secondly, was she aware of any operation during the Vietnam War to actually hunt down and kill American soldiers who had defected?
No, I wasn't aware of that, but I had heard some rumors, which I don't know whether they're true or not, that they actually had bombed some POW camps, and that might be one of the other reasons that they never wanted it to be known about the POWs, because that would come out too. So I don't really know that to be a fact.
Well, I would suggest to Jack that you get the book Spite House, written by Monica Jensen Stevenson, that tells about killing defectors. We also have a four-tape set called Operation Tailwind, and of course you'll hear here story of this incredible operation. It was in Laos, and you'll hear one of the men who was there telling about killing American POWs, but they had to discredit that story. The American people wouldn't feel very kindly about the fact that they were using poison gas on the Laotians, number one, and secondly, that we were killing our defectors without giving them a chance to come home. So, anyway, thanks so much for calling, Jack.
You understand.
Bye-bye. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're going to be back here in just a moment when Chris Carroll will be with us the second hour. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give Carol a call. And she's been spending 40 years trying to get to the bottom of her husband, and chances are he's still alive over there, but he's been abandoned. He's been abandoned by his government, but more than that, he's been abandoned by the American people, who wouldn't really want to have to think seriously about the fact that maybe somehow they're responsible for what their government does. Because believe me, in a free society, it takes more than voting every 4 years to be involved. We have to be involved every day, all day long. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Carol Heidlicher, and we're talking really about the tragic story of certainly her husband who was shot down there, and of course, this constant cover-up of the lies that have been told. Well, let's get into Senator John McCain. Certainly, you know, it's amazing how the media here in the United States always goes to Senator McCain to get his ideas. And, you know, we've got 100 senators. But how many times do we see pictures of the other senators? How many times do we see pictures of John McCain? Do you ever have a feeling, Carol, that there's almost like an invisible force behind Senator John McCain? And every time he has an opinion, we hear it.
Yes.
And when the other senators have opinions, we never hear it?
We never hear it. No, I don't know, other than the fact that he was a POW, and so they put him on some kind of pedestal. And I don't understand that. And the thing that I never understood in all of the legislative things that we tried to get passed, he fought us at every step. And I've never understood, because, you know, if he'd have been left over there, I'm sure he would have wanted his wife to be over here fighting for him and trying to get him out. But he will not. He will not support anything that we try to do. And I've never understood why, because well, unless he just cannot admit, even though he sat there at the Senate Select Committee hearings and heard the testimony that there were men left behind. And why he won't admit it, I do not know.
In fact, he even challenged some of the witnesses. I sort of belittled and ridiculed some of the witnesses who had information. That was quite unconscionable.
Yes, and the other thing that I noticed with Senator McCain is he would make these frequent trips to Vietnam, and then when he would come back, he would be running the halls of the Senate up there doing their bidding for them. And he was, him and Kerry were both, worked very hard to get normalization for Vietnam. And they were trying to do away with the POW issue, and that's why they did this Senate Select Committee hearings, because they thought when they went in there that they were just going to clear this all up. Well, when they opened the door and started seeing the mountain of evidence that there was there, then they were trying to figure out how to get out of it. They didn't even go into the satellite imagery. We have had satellite imagery picking up men's authenticator codes, which they were trained to put down to identify who they were. And there have been many of those picked up. They didn't even go into that. They didn't even open the door to Laos. They didn't want to hear any of that either. And they just did the quick whitewash and came up with the conclusion that, yeah, men may have been left, but they couldn't say that they were alive today, which that's not true.
I believe that both John Kerry and Senator McCain are traitors to our country.
Well, I'd have to agree.
We Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us, because we buy time on radio stations, we buy time on shortwave and on the Internet, and believe me, it's quite a proposition. That we, of course, are going to have to get another station, another shortwave station for our afternoon program, because we're getting such poor reception on the one that we have at the present time. So we do hope that many of you out there will think seriously about joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. This is the only way we have of reaching the American people. The major media is controlled by five mega corporations. That's covered in the book we carry called The New Media Monopoly. The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian is must reading for anybody who wants to understand why we don't get the truth. When Professor Bagdakian began studying the control of the media in 1983, 50 major corporations controlled the media. In the year 2004, five mega corporations dominated the American media and determined what we hear, see, and read, and what we ultimately think. So that's how, of course, they're really able to conceal the truth from the American people, and that's why programs like Radio Liberty, I believe, are important, and why I spend 5 hours every day behind a microphone trying to awaken the people as to what's really going on. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. It's something that you can do, and you become part of our effort. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, of course, you can go to our website. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Our January newsletter deals with the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and how wars are used for purposes far different than the American public is ever allowed to know. Our February newsletter deals with the futility of the wars we fought, how they've been manipulated, and of course the March newsletter deals with the myth of the two-party system. I think you'll find it fascinating when you realize, of course, that for many years we've had one political party with two branches, and it's all an illusion. It is all to make you think that you're going to be able to change the course of events when you go to the polls. But, you know, as somebody once said, it really doesn't matter how you vote. It's who counts the votes. Who counted the votes in Ohio, which turned the course of the last election? Why, of course, it was the chairman of the Bush for President Committee. He was in charge of vote counting in Ohio. How could he be independent and make sure we got a fair count? Well, I mean, you had a choice between John Kerry and George Bush. That's like a choice between being shot or being hung. I don't like either choice, but you never give the sucker an even chance. Our March newsletter, just going out now. If you'd like a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If there's any hope for America, it is in you understanding what's happening and then helping us get the truth out. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters there, and we give you our permission to copy them. You can listen to our archive programs or listen to our live programs there or on the various networks we're certainly affiliated with. And then, of course, you might even look at a few of the products we carry that do help us to some extent in continuing doing what we're doing, the various Berkey products and the Miracle Tuso products and things of that sort. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others, the people, about our programs. Encourage them to listen. And, of course, let them understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Those people who bought cases of books will be getting them very soon. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And you're welcome to call at any time, because our guest this evening is Carol Herdlicka, and we're talking about her husband, who was shot down in, 1965. And it'll be 40 years this May. And she's spent this last 40 years searching for her husband. And of course, she has evidence that he was living as of 1990. The government has repeatedly said he was dead. They said he died in 66, and he died in the 70s, he died in the 80s, and they're simply lying. And what the American people must understand is that there's an organized, orchestrated, coordinated effort at the highest levels of our government to deceive the American people and to deceive the families of the men who were abandoned, because they cannot let the American people know the truth. Would you really want your son or your daughter to go overseas to fight and risk their lives, and then if they were captured, to be abandoned by their government? Would you really want to fight for a government whose one of their leaders says fighting men are stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes? That quote is attributed to Henry Kissinger, I believe, page 194 of the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein. If you want the exact quotation, the exact page, why, we can get it for you, but I believe that's the correct page. You see, the American people, they wouldn't like that. Right now they're having a hard time getting people to volunteer. Even the Marines can't fill their recruiting requirements. A lot of non-citizens, a lot of people who are here who would ordinarily get their citizenship simply by going to the military, they're not joining the military. They're having a hard time getting enough cannon fodder for the current senseless war we're fighting in the Middle East, a war that is not being fought at all, for the reasons the American people have been told. Well, Carol, we have somebody called in and asked about Operation Duck Soup. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yes, I've heard of Duck Soup.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what that's about, and then we'll go to Mark, who's calling from Texas.
Well, basically, what Duck Soup was, an operation that was run by either Air America, CIA, something over there, and it was a different thing each day. Like one day they might be out kicking rice out to people. One day they might be doing a rescue. One day they might be flying the prince from one end to the other. And when I had sent in a FOIA asking about Duck Soup, they denied that there were ever such a name. And then after years of denying that there was such an operation as Duck Soup, then I finally found documents that stated that there was Duck Soup, that David and Shelton had been rescued, and then had to be recaptured, and it was in the Duck Soup document.
No, who was David Shelton?
David is my husband. Oh, Herdlicka and Shelton, I should clarify that. Shelton was another POW, and he was captured before David, and they were held together in Sam Nguyen. Whatever report came across had both their names on it, because they were in the very same area. And so for many years, if you said Herdlicka, Shelton had a report, or Shelton had a report in Herdlicka, and so those names just went together.
And but who was getting them out? Was the CIA getting them out, or what?
Well, no, it was the Hmong people. And see, the thing is that they had I call them ghost teams.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest is Carol Hrdlicka, and we're talking about certainly what's going on, you know, as far as Operation Duck Soup. So now, this was a CIA operation. How did your husband fit into this?
Well, the only reason that my husband was even involved with the duck soup was because that at times they would do rescues if they happened to be in the area. And so there was some kind of rescue attempt made for David and Shelton. And it just came up on the duck soup. Well, when I had requested from Freedom of Information about duck soup, they denied that there was ever such a thing associated with the Vietnam era. Well, it wasn't until many years later we found the documents. Well, actually, you know, when I put in Freedom of Information Act and asked for all documents with my husband's name on it, of course, they denied. Well, right here on this duck soup document, it says Hrdlicka, just as big as life. Well, I should have had those documents, but they don't give them to me unless I happen to find them. And that's the other illusion that the American people have, is you just send in a Freedom of Information, they give you all the information. That's not so. They make it difficult, and if you don't word it correctly, if you leave a word out, then they won't give it to you. And it's just all a big game. And the family shouldn't have to do this. I shouldn't have to do this. I should be able to just call up there and ask for my husband's file, and they should give it to me, but they don't.
But you see, Carol, what you're doing really is working with evil. And there really are evil people there. They know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And until people recognize that there really are evil forces in the world, and many of them are working at the highest echelons of our government, why, nothing is going to change. Now, did you find out why they had to take him back after he had been rescued?
Well, basically what had happened was they had a team that had rescued them, and what happened was then David and Shelton were weak from being in captivity, and they couldn't keep up with the team. Well, the team was starting to be surrounded by the Path of Lao, I suspect. And so the decision was made that they would stay behind and the team should disseminate or go into the jungle and not get caught, too. And that's what they did. They just and they called them ghost teams because that's what they would do. You know, they would just go right back to being the farmer beside the road or whatever. And there was always a CIA person probably with them. And but I was going to mention, too, when you were talking about not letting your children go into the military, they have now changed in the wars. Now, they can't be called POWs. What they have gone in and called them just captured individuals, and they're leaving it up to the country that captures our people to decide what they are. In other words, they could be considered terrorists.
We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Carol Hrdlicka. We've got Mark calling from Texas. So, Mark, how are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Right, how are you?
Good. Good evening, Carol.
Hi.
My father was a pilot in Vietnam. Unfortunately, he was never shot down. And then I was in the Air Force during the 80s, and I actually flew into Hanoi in late 89 and took in a team that was looking through old crash sites for the remains of pilots and whatnot. But the question I have for you is, what advantage is there to these people in Laos and wherever these men may be of keeping them alive, and why haven't they just killed them instead?
Well, because that would be like killing the golden goose. Why would if you were blackmailing somebody, why would you get rid of the blackmail material? Because the Vietnamese have used the POW issue. All you have to do is look back in the early 90s when they were requesting normalization. Nothing was happening. All of a sudden, out comes these photos of possibly POWs, and there was all this information coming out. That's basically a threat from the Vietnamese telling the American government, you better give us some money, or these guys are coming home. And the American government doesn't want them, so then the Vietnamese got normalization, the Vietnamese have gotten everything they've asked for, and that's just like when Kissinger went into the Paris Peace Accords. The Vietnamese got everything they wanted. That is not a negotiation.
Okay.
And I think, Mark, what you have to understand is we really don't want them home.
Well, I understand
the
that.
The last thing that they want is for the American people to realize that the government lies, and that President Reagan lied, and that President Ford lied, and that Jimmy Carter lied, and that President Nixon lied, and that George Bush the First lied, and Clinton lied, and our present president is lying, because they all know about the men we left behind. The one person who really tried to do something was Ronald Reagan, and But I think finally the pressure got to him as well.
Right. Well, and the thing is, you have to understand, all of these people in high places would be terribly embarrassed. But, you know, I have always thought, and I've tried to push this in Washington, when there's a problem, there's a solution. And if they would put half of the effort and money into the solution, we'd have had these men home. They could have done like I thought then Gorbachev was coming over here. No, not Gorbachev.
Yeltsin. It was Yeltsin.
Yeltsin
wanted to give them.
And Yeltsin was going to give us the POWs. I thought, this is the way they're going to do it. This is the way to save face. They'll bring them through Russia. They could have done that. But instead, what did they do? They jumped on Yeltsin and told everybody he was drunk on vodka.
Well, I understand that they don't want him back. And when I was in the Air Force, we were running the missions into Hanoi and taking teams in. We were also bringing remains out, and I was convinced at that time that it was just a means of making money for the North Vietnamese government, because we were paying
Correct.
Them
and the thing
tens
is,
of
Margaret,
thousands of dollars, if not millions.
Is I had found a CIA document that was dated in 89, and it showed in the CIA document that we knew the Vietnamese were salting the crash sites. And
well, yes, and I talked to the team, some of the people in it, and a lot of times we would bring supposedly POW remains back, and it would get to Anderson where they'd do the first check on them, and a lot of them, you know, they knew they weren't American bones or...
Right. Well, see, they did a lot of that. We've buried probably a lot of Vietnamese, Laotians, whatever, in place of our men. But the other thing is that is really disgusting is in this document that I got, it showed that they knew there was a warehouse. The CIA knew that there was a warehouse of remains, and there were over 400 remains. Well, you see, then we had the defector that came over and testified that he actually helped put the remains in the warehouse. So you see, it's a great big charade for the American people to think that they don't know exactly where everybody is over there, because they do. And the thing is, if you will watch, every time one of our delegations goes to Vietnam, they'll come home with some remains.
And of course, but instead of trying to get the live prisoners,
exactly,
they want the bones.
Right.
And it's all a matter of perception, Mark.
Yep.
They want to give the American people the feeling, oh, we're really trying, you
yep.
know. It's like Bill Clinton, oh, I'm just trying so hard to do the right thing, you know. I just couldn't help myself.
Well, let me tell you how they approach the Vietnamese. They have their talking points to the Vietnamese is, we want remains, and we want special remains, and then we'll do archives, and there is never a mention of the men that were in captivity. There were never a mention of the last known alive. And so what does that tell the Vietnamese? That tells the Vietnamese, number one, we want remains. Number two, we want remains. So what is that telling them?
They want remains.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I understand.
And really telling them we don't want our men back.
Right.
And that, of course, is until we can get that information out, Mark. And this is why we have to reach the American people, because most people are good. When they suddenly realize the duplicity, the lies, and the fact that they cannot trust their government, that maybe they'll be willing to get involved and help to elect a few more good congressmen. We have some good congressmen back there. But believe me, they're a minority today.
I am glad to hear that Mark at least saw what was going on.
And I've had, I think, one of the tapes I got from you years ago, Dr. Stan, about this issue, and I've given it to different people, and when, you know, I have, people will ask me, you know, their son wants to join the Air Force and the military, whatever, and I'll talk to them about some of these issues, and I say, you know, I thought at the time I was defending my country, and that was the best thing to do, but from what I've seen and what I've learned, I wouldn't put my son or daughter at risk just to go die.
Definitely.
At the hands of some globalist.
Yep, I agree.
So, well, Carol, I'm very sorry about your husband, and I just wish you luck with your battle.
Well, I appreciate your calling. Thank you very much.
Mark, right. Before you go, are you listening on shortwave or internet?
I listen primarily almost exclusively on shortwave.
Okay, fine. How is it coming in?
It's coming in good tonight.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, and give us a call if you have a question or comment for Carol Herdlicka, whose husband was shot down 40 years ago, and of course she's still looking for him. And of course, the great tragedy is that the average person out there has no idea that they intentionally abandoned a thousand, more than that, American boys. And of course, it all had to do with the $4 billion we promised to give the North Vietnamese, that Henry Kissinger had promised to give the North Vietnamese. And of course, Henry Kissinger has consistently lied about that. Henry Kissinger has been lauded and applauded. He's one of the most powerful men in the country today. In fact, it was his assistant who was picked by the current administration to go over to be the initial ruler of Iraq after we took power. His name is Paul Bremer, who comes from Kissinger and Associates. So this all ties together as you see this constant, from war to war, this continuity of one of the most evil men in this nation today. And if you doubt that, we have a magazine called West Magazine, and there in that is an article about the occult center, which is in Colorado. It's called La Boca Grande, a 200,000 acre was owned by Marie Strong. I think it's in some sort of a trust now. But this is where the occultists come from all over the world to meet. And, of course, the shamans and the witch doctors and the yogas and the Hindus and the mystics and you name it, they're all there. And, of course, frequent visitors are Henry Kissinger and his good friend, Robert Strange McNamara, the man who was Secretary of Defense, who sent American boys to fight and bleed and suffer and die and be abandoned in Vietnam, but never, never be allowed to win. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our telephone number is 464-8295, and we're talking about the prisoner of war issue. And certainly, do you know Mr. Mooney? We've had Mr. Mooney on our program several times talking about the POWs. Do you know him at all?
Yes. I was up there when he testified before the Senate Select Committee hearings, and he was on a radio show that I did, or TV show that I did out of Minnesota. So yes, I know, I'm well aware of Mr. Mooney.
And he certainly was in a position to know what was going on.
Yeah, he tracked the POWs that were going into Moscow. And
I think most people don't understand that a lot of our POWs were actually sent from Vietnam and from Korea. They were sent actually into Moscow to be used for experiments there. And that's what was Yeltsin was offering to give us back when he came to the United States in 1991 and 1992. And he was told in no uncertain terms, we don't want those prisoners back.
And guess who was the vice president when Reagan got the offer for 57 POWs?
I bet his name was Herbert.
Herbert Bush.
Herbert Walker Bush, right.
And guess who was in the presidency when Yeltsin made his little statement?
Right. Well, of course, what most people don't understand is that George Herbert Walker Bush is really one of the most powerful men in the world. You don't get to be director of the CIA if you're a slouch.
Exactly.
He's part of the dark side of our government. He comes out of the skull and bones, as so do many of the people in the dark side of our government, men like John Kerry and men like George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush's daddy, Prescott Bush, who was very closely associated with the Nazi movement. In fact, his bank was indicted for trading with the enemy during the war. So, but unless you understand, unless you can connect the dots, you can't undersee what's going on. And if you're out there listening across America, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, and it'll give you tremendous insight into what's going on. So if you'd like to get a copy of Brotherhood of Darkness so you can begin to see how it all fits together, our telephone number to call is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you get the book, you can get the video, you get the audio tape, get them all together. But you need to understand what we're really up against, because these people in Washington, D.C. are not simply stupid. There are some of them who know exactly what they're doing and who their true allegiance is, but of course, where their true allegiance is, but most Americans don't. And we're going to be back here in just a moment. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And just remember what President Reagan said, a nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its citizens. Well, this is Dr. Stan. What was your impression of what was done during the Reagan administration to try to bring this whole problem to a conclusion?
Oh, I think if Reagan had been left alone, he would have brought him home, because I have a document where an individual is telling the president there's hundreds of men over there, and he truly was interested in bringing him home. But you see, what happens to a president is they get surrounded by these people that have special interests, and then they bring pressure to bear, so the president doesn't really get to do what he necessarily wants to.
You mean people like George Herbert Walker Bush?
Yes, and you know, I've got, like I said, the minutes, and it's very interesting to see how upset they were that Casey had gone to the president with this information without telling them, and you can see how the interaction is going on.
And who was the people who were so upset about it? For our listeners, of course, Casey was the head of the CIA at that time.
Correct, and there was Bush, and Devers was in there, and I don't remember who the others. I'd have to get the paper out and look it up. But there were about four cabinet members there, you know, with the vice president and what have you. And they were upset because Casey had gone around them and gone straight to the president with the offer. And now, see, that's what happens is if they don't want the president to know, and that's the same thing with the senators. If they don't want the senators to know, then they just keep it from getting to them. And what I was thinking when you were talking about our country and everything, when we started off, I believe what it was is the senators and the congressmen actually went to Washington to spend 2 years, almost like our army draft was when I was going to school, and then you came back home and you did it without pay. And look what a difference we have today, that people go up there and they stay for their whole career, 30, 40, 50 years. And then when they leave, they have one heck of a pension, and they have one heck of a health care. And when they want a raise, they vote it themselves on the floor. And now you and I don't get to vote our raises.
No, of course, but you see, we have two classes of people. We have people like you and me, and then we have the ruling elite. And
exactly.
These people, of course, are well cared for by the ruling elite.
Sure.
Simply an extension of the power structure, and as we always love to say, the finest politicians that money can buy. So, you know, but what a tragic scenario it is, because most Americans love America, and I love America, too. I want to do everything I can to preserve it, but until we can get honest people in government, until we can get honest means of communication, until we have in a situation where we really have the opportunity to reach the masses of people, oh, I can get on the radio and talk. But I'm talking to people who know there's a problem. There are people who are willing to listen by shortwave or willing to listen on the Internet. Or of course, one advantage we have is that certainly for the first hour, we have 10, probably 15 stations pulling our program down. The second hour, probably 10 stations pulling it down. And there are a lot of people out there listening to FM AM who probably have never heard a lot of these things before. And after they start hearing it, they think we're crazy. And then after a while, they're afraid we're not. And you know, they hear people like you, and basically, you know, they certainly recognize your sincerity. And so you helped me to get that information out.
Well, the sad part that I think is that these men, when they went, like my husband, he knew the risks, and he knew the possibility that he could be killed, and he knew the possibility that he could be captured, but he did not ever in his wildest dream think he would be abandoned.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Carol Herdlicka, and of course we're talking about the men we left behind. In fact, one of the most interesting stories I've come across is the story of Monica Jensen Stevenson, who wrote the book The Man We Left Behind. You know that one, Carol?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And of course, I got to talk to Monica a number of times, and of course, she started out doing this story after she'd been working as a producer at 60 Minutes and come up with this story, and of course, a tremendous pressure was brought to bear to keep the story from being brought forward. And then, of course, as she was more or less forced to leave, she wasn't actually fired, but it was obvious that her tenure at CBS was not going to be good. And she did a story there, though, on The Men We Left Behind on 60 Minutes. And then, of course, she began studying more of this, and she was married to a man named William Stevenson, a very well-known author, and of course she kept telling her husband that that there was a drug tie and that the CIA were tied into drugs, and her husband couldn't believe that. And then she tells the story about one evening, because her husband was certainly had a lot of connections. They had this fellow from MI6 put his intelligence over for dinner one night, and at the dining room table, why, her husband sort of scoffingly said, my wife thinks that the CIA is involved in drug smuggling. Can you imagine anything like that? And the fellow from MI6 looked at him and said, well, you didn't know everybody in the world in intelligence knows the CIA is involved in drugs. So at that point, of course, Stevenson then decided he was going to actually help write the book, and they co-authored the book together. And what happened to the book? Why, the publisher initially put it out, and then somebody gave orders, and the book was called back from the bookstores. I know, I went to a bookstore, and they told me the book had been called back by the publisher, not to be distributed again. Monica got the rights to the book back, moved to Canada, had it republished up there, and then somebody bought up the publisher and accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of this book. Things like that don't happen in real life, or do they?
Well, see, the interesting thing I will have to point out with the POW issue is, like, for instance, on my husband's case, you would think they would have, like, you see these cold case things on TV now where the detective goes in and he pulls the box off the shelf and he goes through all of the documents that was associated with the case, and then he'll maybe see something different and solves the case. Well, the problem with the POW issue is they shredded our documents in 1992 in Southeast Asia, and when somebody comes to do the investigation on my husband's case, they now have to go to the Library of Congress and get their information. There is no big file for them to go through. There are no handwritten notes to interview people that have come in given information. That's what I find really disgusting.
But don't you think this is done intentionally?
Oh, it is.
They don't want there to be any centralized place we can go. For instance, I talked to Stephen Jones, who was the defense attorney for Timothy McVeigh. He tried to get information, which he was entitled to as the defense attorney.
Sure.
And they would bring him these boxes of files, and they would intentionally misspell the names. They would, of course, withhold information all the time, or they would put false information into the files just to confuse the issue, or only give part of the files, or block out parts of the files. But the idea that they would give him files with names on them that were misspelled, mm-hmm. so that you couldn't have any sort of coordination on there, done intentionally and maliciously, part of an organized effort to prevent people from getting the truth, because we've never gotten the truth about what happened with Oklahoma City, and we're certainly not getting the truth about the men we left behind.
That's what I say about the FOIA and anything. It's all their game, because they have all the documents. And they can give you the documents or they can deny you the documents. And even though we get executive orders to get these documents released, the agencies just flat ignore the law. And so you have to take them to court. Well, see, everybody can't afford to take them to court. And that's the other thing I was told by an attorney in Washington. He said what the government does is they get you in court, and then they stall you and stall you and stall you till you run out of money. And they have an unlimited bank account. I do not. But I shouldn't have to be out here fighting for information on my husband. They should be giving it to me. And I should have every document that his name was ever on.
Well, and people should be right. They should be right and truthful, but unfortunately, the reality, I'm sure that you well realize, is that they're not. And the people who tell the truth will get into all sorts of troubles. And the people who lie and lie and lie and deceive and withhold information,
are
rewarded. This is the incredible part of what's going on today. And I think it's a reflection of the degree of evil that we're up against. So our telephone number, when we get back, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Carol Herdlicka, and would love to hear from you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here with Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Carol Herdlicker. We're talking about her husband who was shot down 40 years ago. And certainly, as you heard those hearings that were, where we had Senator McCain, who is hated by many POWs because they believe he went over to the enemy and, of course, was really responsible for helping the enemy. And then, of course, Senator John Kerry, who recently ran for the presidency. What was your impression of John Kerry?
Well, John Kerry and I had a few go-arounds during the Senate Select Committee hearings, and he had made some promises to me during my testimony up there, and as soon as that Senate Select Committee hearing was over, he would not answer my calls, he wouldn't answer my letters, and I had asked him during the hearings if he would be willing to set up a meeting with the Vietnamese officials and myself, which, of course, he said he would, which, of course, he didn't do. And, like I said, as soon as those hearings were over, he didn't have anything to do with any of us anymore.
Well, what did he do before the meetings or during the meetings? Did he sort of pander to the families? Did he give
you
the feeling he was really concerned about the men who were abandoned?
Mm-hmm. When he started off, I will have to tell you, when he started off, but like I told you earlier, when people go into the POW issue, they come into it with, well, we're going to show you that no men are alive. Well, once they start getting into the information, they go, oh, my goodness, look at this and look at this. And that's the way he came on. He came on, well, I'm going to solve this, and I'm going to help you families. And you could actually watch him turn. When he started seeing the evidence and he started hearing the testimony, you could see him going, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? How am I going to get out of this? And
he did everything he could, of course, to suppress the information. It was almost as if he was on the side of the Vietnamese.
Right. I told him one day, I said, well, you're just bailing these government witnesses out when they don't know how to answer. Oh, I am not. I said, oh, yeah, you are. And he did. If they'd come up and they were stumbling around, he'd jump right in there and help them. But the thing is, like I said, in the beginning, he started out looking like he was going to do something. But when he realized what he was into, he was just trying to get himself out of that the best way he could. And what he did is he shut it down, because actually they could have got more funding and they could have gone on and done the real investigation. And one of the investigators tried to get him brought up on charges too. But I will have to tell you, before Senator Kerry took over that committee in 1991, he was already on the record trying to get normalization for Vietnam. So I saw it as a conflict of interest, because he wanted normalization for Vietnam. His family is the Forbes. Well, they ended up
with
the...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Carol Herdlicker. We're talking about the POW issue, and Carol is saying, talking about Senator John Kerry. And, of course, John Kerry headed the Senate Select Committee that held the hearings back in 1991, I guess it was.
92.
Going into the background of the POW issue. Now, of course, he wanted to have normalization of relationships with Vietnam. The Vietnamese were desperate for normalization of relations. They needed the trade. They needed the money. They needed an outlook for the goods. I mean, they needed to get American technology over there. They needed American loans. So I'm sure they would have given our boys back in a heartbeat if that had been the proviso to get what they wanted. But we didn't ask anything from them when we specifically did not ask to get those men back home. In fact, it's Carol's contention that we let the Vietnamese know that they would do whatever they wanted, but please don't send those boys home. Was that sort of the impression you had?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I asked Mr. Quinn, who was in the Senate or the State Department, I said, well, just tell me what you tell the Vietnamese. And when he got done with his little spiel, basically what he's telling the Vietnamese, we want remains, we want archives, we want anything, but we're not talking about POWs. And you can get the talking papers on all of these meetings that they have over there. They will not bring up the live POW issue. They will not bring up there were men in a prison system in Vietnam. What happened to those men? Because anybody knows anyone in a prison system can be tracked. Well, there's where they should start, but that's not where they start. So it gives a subliminal message to the Vietnamese, we'll talk, deal with you, but don't you mention POWs.
And
that's what's going on all these years.
So if you have any sons or grandsons out there, and you don't mind if they would be abandoned by the government, you go ahead and send them in. If you believe that we always would never leave a man behind, I'm not saying that the men in the front lines would leave a buddy behind. But believe me, our government would abandon them because there are evil people working there. And when you understand that, then you understand why we go from war to war to war.
Well, that's like the Navy pilot Spiker. And the only reason that he got on any MIA list was because of my senator, Senator Roberts. And his buds were on the radio the night he went down. And Cheney was the one that KIA'd him, killed him, before all of the information was in, and it wasn't for the fact of his buds being on there and hearing his radio, he would have been KIA'd. And, of course, they haven't found him in Iraq, but they have found evidence that he was there.
They probably sent him off to Moscow to die with the rest of the men.
Well, I was actually hoping that Hussein would use him as a pawn to buy his way out.
Well, I think
I was hoping for.
Well, I doubt that very much. I think that Hussein's going to look after himself.
Oh, yes. But I thought, well, that might be a good card for him to use against the government because our government doesn't ever want to hear about a POW.
Well, whatever happened to the boys that were sent off to Moscow, to Russia? Do you have any idea? Because I've talked, there's one fellow, I think his name is Brown, who wrote a book called Moscow Bound.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to him and asked him to come on my program. He said, I can't. I'm just burned out. I can't even talk about it anymore.
Right.
He spent so long putting all this information together about the boys, and many of them were sent off to Russia. And our government abandoned their, knowing that where they were there, and intentionally left them to die. So
well, I think
what do we know about what happened to them?
Well, you know, some of them went to the gulags and did die. There's no doubt about it. And I think that there were other men that were used to teach, and that's why they wanted the F-111 pilots, is they wanted them to teach the Russian guys how to fly. And so I think that those people probably were given Russian names. And that's why, and that's the other thing in Vietnam, and maybe Laos too, they give them the names of that country. So when you come and ask for a POW, they tell you they have no POWs, which that is correct. But they probably have some people there that had their names changed. And I think that probably some of the men in Russia have, you know, just died of old age or are still living or whatever. And, of course, the ones that went to the gulags, we know what happened to them. And then, of course, you know, there were people that were used in the Vietnam era, too, for drug and
medical experiments.
Medical experiments, and that's a known fact because we had Shana testified before Dornan's committee to that.
You're talking about General Senya.
Yes, yes.
And why don't you explain to our listeners who don't know who General Senya is?
Well, he was a man that was actually there when the men came through and were transported to these experimental stations.
They actually, he was in Czechoslovakia.
He was in Czechoslovakia at a point as the people were coming through, and he knew these people were going to these different camps. And he defected and came here and testified to the fact at the Dornan committee hearings.
And I really think it is just incredible to think that these things go on and that we can read our news magazines and we can watch television and we can read our newspapers and we think we're getting the truth.
And nothing is ever mentioned about this stuff.
Right. And there are a few books out there, but they're so difficult to get.
Yeah. Well, the bad thing is history is not correct. That's the thing that bothers me the most is nothing about the Vietnam War is truthful. And history is being written, and it's being written incorrectly.
Well, this is what we do, is try to teach people through programs and through our newsletters what Vietnam was really about, and it was never about defeating communism.
Mm-mm.
That is, of course, is the most incredible thing. And I can remember when I was young, and of course, that was, 40 years ago, and I thought, gee, this was great. We were really fighting communism, and we had a right to be there, and we should support our boys, and we should win the war. I didn't realize we never went there to win the war.
Mm-mm. We went there to make money for somebody.
Well, I think it was General Mudley Butler, who gave a talk called War is a Racket. And one of the things he said was, war is the only business of where the profits are measured in dollars and the losses in lives.
Exactly.
And I think that if you haven't read that talk, War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler, all of our listeners really should get it, they should read it, and they should understand the background, because here's a man who fought in China, he fought in South America, he fought in the First World War, he was one of the most decorated of all Marine officers with two Congressional Medals of Honor. That doesn't happen very often. And finally, when he realized it was all a fraud. Now, of course, now the typical explanation is it's all about money, and there's an element of truth to that. But I think behind that, there's another force, and of course, that's the spiritual force we talk about in our material. But certainly, people are making a great deal of money, and Dick Cheney's company, Halliburton, is making a great deal of money, and so are many companies that are affiliated with the Bush interests. And of course, Condoleezza Rice worked for Chevron Oil, just as Karzai, the man we installed as the ruler of the elected president of Afghanistan, comes from Unocal. But of course, we can't tell the American people those sort of things. They might begin asking what this war is really all about, and I will tell you what it's part of. Current war is about. Actually, Exxon has been promised an oil field over in Iraq. BP has been, that's British Petroleum, has been promised an oil field in Iraq. And Royal Dutch Shell has been promised an oil field in Iraq. And if anybody doubts what we're saying, of course, it's actually this last week on the internet, we have the article, but you can go back and you can read Paul O'Neill's wonderful book, The Price of Loyalty, and I believe it's on page 96, where he talks about, it was about 6 or 7 months before the September 11th attack. It was in January or February. He'd just become Secretary of the Treasury. He's attending a meeting of the National Security Council, and there's Rumsfeld, and there's Cheney, and there's Wolfowitz, and they're talking about how are we going to get into a war with Iraq? How will we get justify a preemptive attack on Iraq? And then Paul O'Neill talks about how they've already divided up the oil of Iraq. And this is 8 months before the 9/11 attack, and they've already divided up the oil, which companies are going to get which oil fields in Iraq. But I wonder how many Americans really read the book or understand the implications. Let's go to Tim calling us from Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Hi, everybody. Hi, Carol.
Hi,
I'm Tim. Sorry the situation you're in, ma'am.
Well, I've been to Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's a nice town, middle of the country here, pretty level-head thinking, but a couple quick comments. Now, all during the phony 2004 election, we heard Vietnam vet Kerry. There was all this hub-hub about the Swift boats, but they didn't bring up the POWs, or missing in action, you know, during that 3 months of 2004. And also, these people, Nixon and Reagan and Ford and the two Bushes, they're all these so-called conservative Christians, and they're a bunch of cowards. You know, my father was a World War II soldier in the jungles, so, you know, I know what a non-coward is. I know what a real man is. But my question, what has Kerry done? And also, do you see any correlation between today's so-called Iraq? We've heard so much about the correlation with Vietnam and Iraq. Please comment. Thank you.
Well, the thing I would say with Kerry is he never brought up the POW issue because he knew that was a real bucket of worms to open up during his campaign. And the Iraq thing, I think, can be likened to the thing in Vietnam as well, except hopefully we won't lose as many men, because the war in Vietnam was strictly political, and our men were not allowed to fight in Vietnam. They were sent on targets that the Vietnamese already knew they were coming on. They had to clear their targets with Washington. That's not a way you fight a war. I don't know how they're fighting the war in Iraq. I don't know, you know, who's controlling that. But I would hope that they're letting the fighting man do his job.
Well, I think that, of course, they whatever we say, the war is not being fought for the reasons that we've been told. Certainly Saddam Hussein was not about to attack Minneapolis or New York City. We did not have to immediately attack him, as Dick Cheney insisted. Oh, he's got all these weapons of mass destruction. We can't wait another day. We've got to protect America. That's why we've got to attack. And, of course, it was all a lie. But
well, that's what most wars are, just like Congress was never told the truth about Vietnam either, and they're never going to be told the truth.
Well, one of these days, why, maybe we can get people to really understand what Vietnam was really about, and this is one of the things we've written about extensively, and until people can understand how war is used to change society here at home, how we send young men overseas to fight for freedom as we lose our freedom here at home. Once you begin to understand the pattern, then of course it comes, you can see it enacted over and over again. We've got Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack.
Yes, Dr. Stan. Carol last hour mentioned that Skull and Bones McCain gutted.
No, I don't think John McCain is Skull and Bones.
No, I don't think he's Skull and Bones,
no,
but he gutted the Missing Persons Act.
All right. But he co-chaired the Senate Select Committee with Skull and Bones Kerry, did he not?
Yes. Well, no, he was not co-chairman. Senator McCain was just one of the senators. Actually, Bob Smith from New Hampshire, Senator Smith, was the co-chairman. Kerry was the chairman.
So who's responsible for shutting it down? Because if I recall correctly, Dr. Stan, Jerry Mooney and General Oldham had presented irrefutable, unimpeachable evidence of live POWs, and at that point they shut the hearings down.
Well, I think it was Kerry and McCain, but was General Odom there, Carol?
I don't remember him.
I don't remember him either.
The other one was Manarson.
Well, was General Ty there?
No, General Ty was dead by then.
Okay.
He died of cancer. And so, no, he wasn't there.
So what evidence can I present to Vietnam vets and Korean vets that I know to deprogram them regarding this issue?
Well, that is very difficult, because if they do not want to open their minds, they're not going to, because once they realize and once they see the evidence that men are there, then they're going to feel obligated to do something, and most people don't want to do anything.
Let me suggest, Jack, that we have two 4-tape sets. One is called The Men We Left Behind. It's a powerful, powerful tape set. And it really, if you listen to it, there can be no question at all. It's my interview with Monica Jensen Stevenson. It's my interview with Colonel McKinney, and interviews with other people who knew about the men we left behind. This new video, of course, we're talking about missing presumed dead, but of course this gets into Korea. But I think probably one of the best things we have is the Helms Committee report. And if they will read that Helms Committee report, we do have that through Radio Liberty, which was prepared by the staff, Senator Helms' staff, when he was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he was on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That report cost every one of the men who wrote it their jobs, because they had to be destroyed for daring to tell the truth.
So
those, I think, are excellent sources of information. Do you have anything else you could think of that that Jack could get that would help him to convince people?
No, I would think that if he would get the video and just get a bunch of his guys together and let them see the video, and then, you know, hit them with the foreign relations report, and then if they are going to be involved, they're going to be involved.
Then I'll follow up with the Operation Tailwind data that you have to understand.
That is very good. In fact, we actually have the testimony separately by Admiral Thomas Moore, who verified that the entire story was true. And the last thing that the government wanted was for the American people to know that the story of Operation Tailwind, which was put out, I think, by CBS, I'm not certain, but put out by one of the major networks. And of course, it ended up April Oliver, who'd done the story, was fired, and her superior was fired. But eventually, of course, they launched a countersuit. And April Oliver could not tell me how much money she got, but she told me she had a new house, a new car, and she was studying to be a lawyer. She knew she would never get a job in television again. But the story she told of Operation Tailwind was absolutely true. we went there and we killed our defectors, mm-hmm. and we used sarin gas, and they could not let the American people know that. But we have it all on a four-tape set and that testimony.
I'll be ordering, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much.
God bless. Thanks so much, Jack. Okay. And, of course, there's just so much more to this whole incredible story. But for our listeners out there, if you haven't seen our Vietnam special, we have a four-tape set on why we were in Vietnam, and then a four-tape set on the men we left behind, and then a four-tape set that nobody else has, One Man Returned, the story of Bobby Garland, who actually came back, and interviews with him and Colonel McKinney, who is, of course, told by the military to kill Bobby Garwood. And it's a fascinating four-tape set, information you'll never get elsewhere. We're going to be back in just a minute to wrap up this evening's program here with Carol Herdlicka. Well, Carol, we've got about 3 minutes left. Do you have a message you'd like to get out? Is there a website or anything that you'd like to get out to the people?
Oh, there's all kinds of websites that they'll get up there and just search on POW, and they can get up on Google and punch in my husband's name, David L. Herdlicka, and get all kinds of information on him, too. And the main thing is, you know, for them to just realize that they are not getting the full truth, and that there are men left behind, and we have documents to back it up. It's not us just saying it. It's not our word. And the other thing is, you know, that really bothers me is like when Monica Jensen was trying to do her story on 60 Minutes, they get a government person on there to just make a blanket statement. But, you know, none of those government witnesses are ever asked to produce a document. They're never asked to show the truth. And it just kills me that the reporters just stand out there and just take whatever a government official tells them as the gospel. They don't ask to see the documents. They don't ask for any proof. And that bothers me probably more than anything. But anybody that thinks that there aren't any men left behind in Southeast Asia are mistaken, and they shouldn't be accepting the government's word unless they've seen the documents.
But even the documents, I fear, many times are falsified, because these people have an agenda. And, of course, they are paid very, very well, and they're richly rewarded for lying to the American people. That's what's so unconscionable yes. about this whole incredible story.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I have found documents in the Library of Congress where they actually were tracking the POWs through the 80s. Of course, they take off all the agencies, so you can't find out where it came from, but they're actually tracking men. And so I know that the U.S. government knows exactly where they are.
Well, are they still tracking them today?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do, because with all of the travel over there, they have to know where they are. And that's the thing that throughout this whole thing, when I was doing the investigation on my husband's case, I could never figure out why they weren't doing anything. Well, then finally one day it dawned on me after I sat there and watched all of those hearings. They don't have to look for the POWs because they know exactly where they are. And you know, with our satellite imagery, let's face it, they can, I was told one time by an individual that if there's a golf ball laying on the ground from those spy satellites, they can see the dimples on the bottom.
I'm sure they can, but they can't find Osama bin Laden.
Exactly.
They can't find our boys.
Exactly.
That we abandoned.
They can't find our boys.
And of course they could find them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they know exactly where they are, and I'm sure they know exactly where Osama bin Laden is. But the last thing they'd want to do would be to get Osama bin Laden, because then how could we justify continuing yep. the war on terror? If we brought our boys home, they'd mm-hmm. find out we lied to them. Good night, and God bless you, Carol.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being our guest.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our program this evening. I think it's so important that you understand that the degree of wickedness at the highest levels of our government, and it many times it goes right into the White House itself. Now, we do have a wonderful four-tape set on Vietnam. We have a great four-tape set on The Men We Left Behind. We have another four-tape set on One Man Returned, the story of Bobby Garwood. We have the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report goes into the background of the men we abandoned the First World War and the Second World War and Korea and Vietnam. This is must reading for anybody who really wants to know what this is all about. And it was very well documented. And it cost the men who wrote it their jobs, because the people, the wicked people in positions of control, could not have this information out. The report is called, we call it the Helms Committee Report, but it has much, I think, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Report on the POW, something of the sort. Just ask for the Helms Committee Report. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we're going to carry this video. We'll be call it Missing, Presumed Dead. I have no idea. Any of the details about it, we'll have to get that from Bill Dumas, but we watched it. My wife and I watched it night before last, and really just totally consumed with the power of this video. And there's another excellent video that we should carry because we want to get the information out, and we want you to help us get that information out. You see, it's really up to you and the listening audience to do the work. I can only talk to so many people. I spend 5 hours a day on the radio, and I do. It's about all I can manage at this time. But you talk to people every day, and it's up to you to tell others, to tell others, to others. Get them listening to our programs. Let them understand what the issues are, whether it be how they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation or poisoning our children with vaccinations with mercury in them, and they know, of course, it's destroying their minds. And if you didn't hear that program the other evening with Dr. Mark and David Geyer, who got into the CDC database and showed that the CDC and high government officials knew that they were destroying the minds of our children. And then, of course, this story of aspartame, this story of so many of the things that are going on today that are being concealed, that will ultimately destroy the lives of the people in this country. Well, you need to get the information. It's available through Radio Liberty. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, please encourage others to listen to our programs. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, I think the February newsletter deals with the background of the wars we're involved in. I think it's a powerful, powerful letter. I know one of my friends who's a veteran was very angry at me for writing this letter. He said, shouldn't we be backing our men over in Iraq? And I said, the best way to back them is to get them home rather than have them continue going over there to die in a war that is not being fought for the reasons that our government says. Loyalty to our country is not loyalty to the wicked people who control both political parties in the United States. And that, of course, gets into the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to understand the myth of the two-party system, why our March newsletter will send you any one of them free of charge. Of course, we really hope that you want to subscribe or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and become part of our effort to educate the American people. So I don't know any organization. We really don't have an organization. It's just my wife and myself and my son and a couple of people we have here helping us. But if you'd like to become part of our effort, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.